I have three guys and they're driving me nuts already. I can't figure out which one which. One dances, two of them wrote the script, and all of them had blood covered all over them. So they look really different without the blood. So guys, the Night Watchman, where did it come from? The concept. Help me out here.
Well, this is a story that goes back quite a few years, and it happens in the wee hours of the morning where my good friend Ken... Ken, raise your hand. There you go.
That's me. Yeah, that's me.
There's no video, guys, only audio, so nobody's going to know what you look like.
All right, cool. Perfect. I did all this lighting and all this stuff over here for nothing.
I know. I'm sorry. I know you have a beautiful poster behind you, but...
Can I put the microphone for nothing?
Yes, I know. I'm sorry. You got all dressed up for nothing.
It's okay. My basement always looks like this.
Well, that's good to know. Yeah. So I'm looking for a kill room. I just dropped by.
Yeah, sure. Come by.
Thank you.
Got plastic all over the floor. We're set to go.
Awesome.
You got to bring your own bag of lime, though.
Oh, that's okay. I can do that.
Yeah. Go ahead, DeLuca. Tell the story.
Oh, so we're somewhere around 2 o'clock in the morning, and Ken calls me up, and I think he's had a beer too many. Or maybe one not enough. Who knows? And Ken says, hey, Dan, what can we film here in our studio with me, you and Jiggets, Kevin Jiggets, who plays the African-American gentleman in our film. His name in the film is Jiggets, so I think you can figure him out. I know he and I look a lot alike. If you watch the film, he gets confused.
Oh, it's very confusing, yes. DeLuca, Jiggets, I couldn't tell the difference.
But the three of us have been friends for quite a long time and have been looking for something to work on together. And I said, Ken, give me a couple weeks. And in those couple of weeks, we talked back and forth and agreed upon a horror comedy film that ended up being The Night Watchman. Three basically inept, incompetent night watchmen who go through this horrific night, like, despite their failings, overcome. Because of who they overcome. And that basically night starts off with a young man that comes in for his first day on the job, Max Wilbur, who does a great job as an actor on the film, plays the kind of the ingenue new guy, not knowing what to expect, and he's thinking it's just going to be laid back, playing cards, smoking weed, and watching nudie movies on the screen, and it becomes something totally different. Within that, we ended up getting hooked up with Eduardo Sanchez, who's the director of the Blair Witch Project, who said, hey, I'll help you guys put together, we had asked him, put together a trailer for this, and he wrote a trailer for us that we ended up shooting, and that basically was it was a teaser to help us raise money for the film. And I'll let Ken take it from there.
So after we got the teaser done, we went out and we found our financing. We were fortunate enough to have some people come to the set and who had some money. And they came to the set, saw what we were doing, liked what we were doing, saw how professional that we had run the set, and they decided to help us out, and they brought together an investment group, and that's how we raised our funds for the film. And then once we had our funds, we just went right into production, and we got it done. We shot the film.
I do have some questions. Your film looks very professional. I think you guys know that from what a lot of things. How come this doesn't get a theatrical release? Like, I think it's good enough.
Well, it didn't get a theatrical release here domestically, and it's kind of difficult nowadays because if you're not a superhero film and you're not, you know, it's tough to have a distributor try and get you into a theater now. The money is more in the video on demand, Blu-ray sales. That's where the money's at for a film at our level right now. Because if you put it into a theater, you have to put a marketing push behind it, which is going to cost you almost $1 million right there, you know, up front, and it's tough to make your money back in that situation.
We did get theatrical overseas, though. So
we did.
Yeah. Overseas, we got theatrical release, which also we got pirating as well.
Yes, we got plenty of pirating.
How did that feel then, to see that somebody wanted to pirate your film that badly?
Look, listen, you know what? If somebody it flattered me because I was like, you know, I've never had a film that I made that somebody wanted to pirate, and it got viewed, like, on one site, it was almost 1 million times, and most of the comments were stellar. People loved it. So I was kind of happy. You know, I unfortunately had to go in and do a copyright claim to get it pulled down, but, you know, It is what it is.
You have to do that. It's your money.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I would look at. Okay, you guys haven't addressed Blimpo the Clown. Where, who's afraid of clowns?
Yeah, well, that story, Blimpo, in one of the first drafts of the film, we always had this guy, Blimpo. But Blimpo was always kind of a small side character. And, you know, my thought was, I want to bring in something kind of a la Ghostbusters that, like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, something everybody adored that is now your worst enemy. And so that's kind of my homage to Ghostbusters. But then the director had seen the script and he said, wait, you've got a clown in here? How about we make the main antagonist the clown and make the main antagonists, all of them, the clowns? And, you know, we thought that was a great idea. And we went ahead and, you know, I rewrote the script to include that with Jamie. And we made Blimpo the main antagonist. And, you know, that moves forward as well. I'm sure I'll have other questions, and I won't reveal anything right now.
Okay. No, I have lots of questions. You bring the new guy in. He didn't have an HR interview? I thought that was funny. That made me laugh. I did pull that right out going, no HR interview? What's up with that?
We were interviewing him. Yeah, we were putting him through the – we knew we were going to hire him. We were just giving him a tough time. That's all.
It worked well. I thought that made me laugh. And human bowling, is this a personal story or you just made that up?
You know,
made it up.
Thought about what is the stupidest thing we would actually do, meaning me, Ken, and Kevin, and that's what we would actually do. And so that's what happened. And that goes along with Dan Franco's dancing here.
I was getting there.
My thought at that point was, what is the stupidest thing that these guys could think of to prove that this guy is not a vampire? Dancing.
Oh, I agree. So Dan, how'd you get ready for your dancing scene?
I've watched a lot of boy band videos. You know, stretching, calisthenics, things like that. It was actually really, really, really difficult because, you know, these guys who I've known for years were on the other side. You know, we shot it. They were there opposite me when we were shooting this thing. And it's just, they're dying over there. Like,
oh, I'm dying
for me
too.
To not crack up opposite them was probably the hardest thing I've ever had to do as an actor.
I have to say it was brilliant. It was better than I could have ever expected.
I have to give you full credit. I thought it was white men dancing at a wedding. They're like Boney M or something.
Little cabbage patch. You have to call in the Harry McSally, the white man's overbite.
Yes.
Yeah, a little bit of that. The funny thing was Ken's supposed to cut me off earlier in the sexy dance portion of that, and you know, it's kind of like an improv moment. I knew he was going to mess with me somewhere in there, so he never threw me the line. So I just had to keep going. And,
perfect.
And,
perfect.
I was going to start taking clothes off. You know,
Keep coming up with new moves. Hey, well, you didn't tell him about the twerk session you had with the stunt crew either.
That's true. We got
Blimpo, the guy that played Blimpo, Gary Peebles, and another of our stunt performers, Dan Carter, they actually put me through twerk camp. They wanted to make sure that the twerking, that the ass movement was on point. So they before we shot, they had me out in a different part of the set, just teaching me the basics of twerking.
That's awesome. I have to ask, where did you guys find such a big building? Or is it just like one floor? It looks like multiple floors, I would say.
Yeah, we got to give kudos to Bill there. Go ahead, Ken. You take it.
Bill Steffi, he's the, when you watch the film, the office worker who's lying on the floor with his neck ripped out.
Yes, when the woman walks in the room.
Yeah, that's our locations manager. And he had been showing us a bunch of buildings locally here in Maryland. And one just fell right into our lap. It was called the Capital Gazette, which is the newspaper here. And it was their old printing facility. They had just been bought by the Baltimore Sun. And bought. Is that a word?
Yep, it's not really a word.
Did I just make that up?
You did.
I think I just made up a word. They had just been bought by the Baltimore Sun. And they left the facility, but they left everything behind.
The printing press, everything.
And we just came right in behind them, and they were like, yeah, use it all. Do what you want.
So you got a whole building to yourself.
We
say that again?
We had a building to ourselves, except a small section that was a library or a bookstore, which was separate from the building. And these guys at the Capitol Gazette charged us nothing for the time we were there. We used the electricity. Some of us slept there, including myself, for 6 weeks.
The cubicles, all the stuff, it was already there. We didn't have to set dress it. It was just walk in, set up cameras, and shoot.
But we couldn't have asked for better. It was a perfect studio. We had all our offices there. We ate there. Again, we slept there. The only thing we did not shoot in that location was the opening sequence with the band, and that was shot at a friend's nightclub bar in Annapolis.
And that band, by the way, is Jimmy's Chicken Shack.
That's right.
If you know who they are, they were pretty big back in the early '90s on MTV. So
brilliant group.
You know what's funny? I'm Canadian. We don't get MTV. We didn't get it till recently.
Oh,
we had our own Canadian version, so I would never know who Jimmy Chicken Shack was.
You weren't missing anything
because the stuff now is garbage. Back in the day when me and Ken were young. Mm-hmm. Was in diapers, you know, MTV was actually cool.
Yeah, we would get like your offshoots. Like I would never get that. We get like Beavis and Butthead and Red and Stimpy, stuff like that would come up, but I wouldn't get to see your stuff. We had our own versions of them all.
Hey, where are you located in Canada?
Toronto is probably the easiest place. I'm just outside of Toronto.
And how come it's not called Canada? If you guys are Canadians, like we're Americans, it's called America.
Ken lives right around the corner from the outdoor game last night.
Yeah, I did. The Capitals.
The Maple Leafs were in Annapolis last night.
Yeah, they lost 5-2.
Yeah.
Did you guys do what we do here in America? Every time we have an election, we say, we're moving to Canada?
No, we definitely are not coming. Not one Canadian I know wants to go.
Because I always say to people on the internet or on Facebook or whatever, I don't think Canada wants us.
You guys are more welcome to come. Free healthcare, you can't go wrong.
There you go. I'm all for that.
We don't have liquor stores full of booze like you guys do. Like, we have them, but they're not quite to your size. Oh, I have a question. Who wrote, "I work hard not to work hard"? Was my one of my favorite lines in this film.
That was Jamie Nash. And there was a whole Oprah thing in there. And Jamie wrote, you know, I work hard not to work hard.
And the black woman, the black woman, she's speaking to Riggs and goes, "We carpool together. You don't know me."
That I wrote.
That was great. Absolutely some great stuff.
You know, one of the things was with Jamie, basically, you know, Ken and I came up with the skeleton, and then I wrote kind of the first rough draft and a couple of rough drafts, and then we sent it to Jamie, and Jamie put in some really, really good stuff. And the amazing thing was, you know, I had worked with other people before, but it seemed like Jamie and I just kind of bounced stuff back and forth, you know, easily. And I think we worked really, really well together. I mean, the only thing I can remember having any sort of lengthy discourse on with Jamie was I wanted the dancing scene to last as long as it did. And I can remember getting the script back that he had cut the dancing scene out. And I'm like, no.
No.
The dancing scene stays. But it's 2 minutes long. That's okay.
Thank you.
No, the dancing scene works. Dan's dancing scene works. Riggs' dancing scene. Okay, I got to dance now.
Wait, let me correct you. It's Jiggets.
Jiggets, sorry, I keep saying Riggs. Jiggets.
That's okay.
The Jiggets dancing scene was great, too.
Jiggets, yeah. Jiggets is, again, a long-time friend of ours and a heck of a lot of fun to work with.
And that was the cool thing about this whole project was that, you know, there's so many friends that were involved in it. The guy that did the art direction, the guy that, you know, Jamie, we've worked with forever. We've done a lot of films with him. He is a co-writer with Eduardo Sanchez as well, and you know, he's written movies that we've all been part of, Lovely Molly and things like that. So it was this thing that was this great experience, and what made it even better was this, that we had all of our friends were also involved in it, and it wasn't just, hey, our friends are getting together to shoot a movie. Like, it was a real movie that we were all involved in, kind of like we've all been working toward this point for 20 years together.
And, you know, here's the thing. Well, I work with Ken and Jiggets and Dan before, and even 6 months before we shot this film, I had them all on a film that I directed, which has been remastered, coming out as Eco Teens Save the World, a kid's film. But I knew, you know, and they knew, and Ken knows, and we all know that we can count on each other. We do this because we love doing it. We don't do this to get a paycheck. We do this because we just enjoy doing it. And so I dragged these guys down to Richmond for no money, and they did a stellar job on this kid's film. And we just wanted to work together, and that includes the guys that did the lighting, you know, Jimmy Ray, and all our East Coast crew that we knew and we had worked with before. And they said, yeah, let's get together and let's make something great. And we were more interested in just giving it our all. And absolutely everybody did. The stunt guys, Misfits of Mayhem, they did an amazing job, and we had them on our trailer, and they came in. We didn't know who they were. It was kind of a reference from somebody else, and Jeff Wilhelm said, yeah, we'll help you guys out. And they did, and they did a brilliant job, and, you know, they didn't kill any of us. They dragged Franco down, you know, a quarter mile stretch on a pulley and beat up poor Ken, throwing him through a wall, and then throwing me down a set of stairs, not stairs, but a rollers that I dropped to my knees and stabbed somebody. But they kept us safe, and they just wanted to work, and they just wanted to do a great job. And everybody we brought in, that's what they wanted. They just wanted to do a great job, and they did a great job, a fantastic job.
And our stunt team has gone on, the guy that played Blimpo, Gary Peebles, he's down in Atlanta now. He's doing a whole bunch of the Marvel stuff, doing stunt work. He was on Black Panther as one of the Jabari warriors. He's been on Luke Cage and Jessica Jones.
He was on the last Rock film too.
Yeah. In the Fast and Furious. So they're all moving on and doing stunt work at the highest levels as well. So it's just this great intersection of where all of us came together for this crew to work together and do something special.
Yeah. I think that's great.
Two things before we move on. Okay. I just want to say the first thing is Dan does it for the love of it. I do it for the fame and fortune because, you know. and who said we were friends? I don't remember saying that.
Well, you know, there's a little paycheck I get every month from your wife that says, please be the same friend to Ken.
Somebody, at least my wife's, you know, looking out for me. She's like, yeah, he needs a friend, so I'll pay. Yeah, how much? What?
You mean like last night when she was looking for you?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Guys are back. I love it.
Well, you know.
We are too intertwined. So Ken and Franco do a weekly thing called Appletinis with Ken, right? And it's a weekly show about sports, unfortunately, because I don't follow sports. Basically things that piss you off, what chaps your ass.
Pop culture. Sports is kind of
sports is part of it. Yeah.
The B segment.
Yeah. And so we are very intertwined, so much so that we couldn't pull anything over each other and wouldn't even try anyway.
That's awesome. Who had the farting vampire idea?
I
can't let that go without asking. That was funny. I couldn't stop laughing. I'm like, that made me laugh really hard too.
You know, that was my idea, and Jamie jumped right on it. He was happy with it. And then as I started writing the script, I thought, oh my goodness, I have to keep doing this. And with somebody after we did the premiere of it, we did a premiere just for cast and crew up in Maryland. We had a journalist come up to me and said, "Who came up with that?" And I said, "You know, I'm embarrassed. I have to say I did." And he said, "Well, you know, at first it was funny, and then it got tedious, and then it got funny again."
No, got tedious. It just made me laugh and laugh and laugh.
You could have said.
No. And we haven't been able to win with the farts because some people have said, oh, it just got old. It's sophomoric. And some people, there were a couple in one of the earlier cuts, in one of the festival cuts, where Penny doesn't fart when she dies. And they called us out like, hey, why didn't Penny fart? And so we went back and put that in.
Because the reaction was there though in the footage, but you know, I make a face like ugh, but there was never the sound of her actually farting, so it was kind of weird.
Hey, let me tell you this. Okay, we are grown men, right? Grown mm-hmm. men, if I may say. The three of us are well-educated grown-ass men.
Okay. Speak for yourself.
I was going to say the same thing.
So
I can't even say the word bought.
We bought in this. So, you know, in this, come on. It doesn't matter. Fart jokes are still funny. We have jokes in there, if you pay attention, that reference, you know, operas from Puccini, if you have that, you know, if you pay attention. Two sophomore jokes, but they're yep. all funny from both sides of the spectrum. So there's the sophomore stuff, which I still love, and then there's the intellectual sophomore stuff, which I still love. And in between me and Jamie, that stuff is in there from bottom to top. Because, hey, I am going to sit there and say, yes, I love fart jokes. And everybody loves fart jokes. Admit they love fart jokes. And if they don't love fart jokes, I would not want you as a member of our club.
I'm with you. So I'm okay then. I'm in. I'm good. I like fart jokes.
I don't think we were looking to change the world with this film. I just think we were looking to make people laugh. And exactly. it's a certain style of humor. And if you don't get it and you don't like it, that's okay. I'm not taking it personally, because there are plenty of people out there who enjoy the film. They love it, you know, and we get great comments. And that's what we were looking for.
We wanted to make people laugh. We wanted this to be a comic book. And we wanted people to laugh, because you know what? There's too much drama out there as is already. The world is a scary place, and this is a place to hide. And Ken and I are, you know, are huge fans of Simon Pegg. Simon, if you're listening to us, you know, contact us.
yes, Edgar Wright. We love Edgar Wright.
We're huge fans, and we love the stuff he does, because it's the same thing that we do. And if you look at Simon Pegg's stuff, there is work stuff. And then there is stuff that is highly intellectual and funny. And you got to hit that spectrum. It's the same thing as watching the old Wile E. Coyotes or, you know, the old cartoons, where there's stuff that is – you're not going to get it if you're a kid, but if you're an adult, you're going to get it. But it goes ahead and ranges that entire spectrum. And, you know, we're not too proud to say we love fart jokes.
Who did the special effects? Man, you guys got blood coming out of everything.
Go ahead, Dan.
Franco. So most of the blood is practical. So RJ Hattie, who was he was on season two of Face Off.
Season five.
He came up – so, like, when they shoot Willie and that blood splatters, just sprays them for, like, 5 minutes – that was a practical application. He was down below them. There was a tube that ran up the back of the actor to the wound, and he just pumped it through the tube. And the blood vomits, those were real. There are a few, you know, when vampires get shot or staked, there's a couple little VFX splatters, but otherwise most of it was practical, and it was RJ Hattie and Edward Warren on set that handled those.
Yeah, they did a brilliant job, and RJ, I got to tell you, as a human being, salt of the earth, we met him through a friend, and through that friend, you know, that friend basically said, hey, you know, Dan's a stand-up guy, and he said, okay, you know, if you say Dan's a stand-up guy, I will go ahead and work with you, and he did, and he, you know, saved our ass in some places as well.
So we've left out one major character we've never discussed. Where did you find your female lead?
Cara Louise. She came on board when we brought Mitch Altieri on board. He wanted to have a strong female lead, and we went to Los Angeles through the casting director Paul Ruddy, and she auditioned. She sent it in. We watched it, and we all agreed that she was the best choice for that role, and she came on out. She flew out from L.A., and then she was here with us for the entire shoot.
Let me tell you a little bit about Kara. There is the – yeah, I'm not going to give anything away, but there's a sequence where we're outside on this roof and there's snow on the ground.
Yep.
I was going to get there.
Kara walks through this snow. It is literally got to be 15 below up on that roof because the wind is pulling hard. She walks through the snow, goes to the end, do this scene in high heels. Ken picks her up and walks her back. She did this, what do we do this, like 5-6 times?
At least. Yeah, and they were open-toed shoes, too. They weren't closed-toed heels.
She never complained once. Now, that's not to say she didn't complain through the entirety of the rest of the film. The hard stuff. Kara sucked it up, and she did it. And, we were all duly impressed by what she did.
While we were shooting, we got hit by, I guess they called it a polar vortex. So we were dealing with, like, wind chills of 15 below, and it was insane.
And you guys, it's like a Tuesday up
there. Yeah, I'm just shaking that. It's not cold.
And so she has that one scene where she runs off into the night, and that was one of the coldest nights ever down here. And you know, she's in a skirt and a tank top, basically, running in the night in heels, and she nailed it, you know.
And she didn't complain about it at all. She complained about us because we smelled bad, or... Oh, we were in the green room next door, and we were loud, and they didn't have pistachios that were organic.
We didn't put the seat down. Remember that?
Seat. I'm kidding. But the true thing is,
I'm not.
I didn't put the seat down. Thing was a real thing. Why don't you guys put the seat down?
And what did I tell her?
47 adult men here and one woman. How would you lift the seat up?
Yeah, that's what I said. I said, why don't you lift it up? What?
No, but she was great. So kudos to Kara.
Sorry, I'm just laughing. Zombies can't see without glasses is something I've not seen in any other film. I thought that was
right.
Brilliant. Word perfect.
That was a zompire.
Yeah, it's a zompire.
Cross between a vampire and a zombie. And again, kudos to Jamie Nash, who came up with the zompire line and the fact that she couldn't see without glasses. But again, why not? Why not? Why would she be able to see without glasses? You know, she couldn't do it when, you know, she was human and not undead.
Made me laugh so hard. I thought that worked perfectly. Whose idea was the clown summoning scene?
Blimpo beat my blowing his horn there.
Yes.
Yeah, I gotta say that was Jamie because I don't remember doing it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I got a story about that scene. That was the first scene we shot. Or no, it was one of the first scenes we shot with Blimpo the clown.
The right. summoning
it was the
scene?
First scene. This where he's honking the horn. Yeah. You know, we shot that first. That was his first scene. And as a producer, I'm sitting there on set watching this shot, and we dolly up to him, zigzag, and then we settle on him, beeping his horn. And when I saw that on the screen, I turned around and I said to Dan and I said to some of the other producers, I said, this is going to be good. This is going to be really good. So I could tell from just that one shot, that summoning shot right there, the way it looked. And I was just like, yep, this is going to be fun.
I got to say, I love the reverse of that shot when it comes to the five of you kind of intermixed inside all that piping, looking out at him. I love that shot. It's probably my favorite shot of the movie.
Yeah, we shot that weeks later. We didn't shoot that same night. We shot that weeks later. So, yeah.
I think my favorite shot on the summoning scene is when you guys pan off and show his buddies all eating somebody.
Yeah.
I love the colors. The colors pop so hard on that scene for me. I'm like, that was brilliant.
And, you know, and that's one of the things, when you're doing a comedy, yes, it's a horror, but really it's a comedy. When you're doing a comedy, you know, the colors have to be bright. They have to be vibrant. You know, that's what people want to see. It can't be morose. So really, you know, kudos to the editor. He did a phenomenal job.
Costuming, like, you guys are really good. I think the, like, Watchmen look perfect. I think everybody in the place looks perfect. I think the clowns look good. Did you spend a lot of time on that, or just somebody came in and said, okay, this is what you're wearing?
The costuming?
Yeah.
Ken, why don't you take that? You know, the one thing I can tell you is that when we thought up this idea, Ken and I thought, what would be the easiest thing for people to wear at Halloween next year as the Night Watchman? You know, a Night Watchman outfit. Big deal. It's a blue outfit with a little badge. So that's kind of where that comes from. But Ken,
so,
go ahead.
We had a costume designer, and we brought her in from L.A., and Dawn. Dawn,
good job.
I'm evil.
Yeah, so we brought in Dawn, and she had a good budget to work with. She went out. She went to all the local costume stores. She ordered stuff from online, a security store for our security uniforms. Those were all the real deal, the security uniforms. She didn't just piece that together. She went and bought real badges and nameplates and belts and everything. And she did a nice job. She had a crew of people working with her on set every day. You know, she made us look good. You know, and she had a lot of work because, you know, obviously she had the clowns. You know, when we had the big scenes, we had a lot of people on set. The one where we get swamped at the end with all the extras and everything, those were busy days. And, you know, she had a lot of work to do. But she pulled it off, and we looked really good in the film. So
let me tell you something. You know, each individual person, you know, on this set, we're talking a low-budget film, even though, you know, the production value was extremely high. We are talking about people that really know their craft and can squeeze, you know, every nickel for what it's worth. And that really is what made the film worth its value. I mean, that's really what made the film come together, was everybody out there, from the stunt guys to, again, you know, costuming. They did an impressive job for what they had. And, you know, Chester Stacy was our props guy and set design, and he did all that stuff.
James, don't forget about James.
James.
The armorer. You know, he was dealing with all the firearms and everything we had.
Yeah, and so these guys did an amazing job because they love what they do. It had almost nothing to do with we're hiring you for a job. It had more to do with I love doing this work, and I'm going to do the best job I possibly can. And that's why, you know, Frank is a friend of ours, and Ken and I are friends, and Jiggets and I are friends, and a lot of the other guys, Stephen Lyons, who did some of the DP work on second unit, Jimmy Ray, who was our gaffer and grip at the same time, but he was our gaffer, best boy, and he did an amazing job. Which we couldn't have done without. We honestly couldn't have done without these guys. These are guys that could give Hollywood a run for their money, and they do it with ease because they love doing it.
How tall is Bloodball? I keep forgetting to ask. How tall is he?
Actually, Gary is only about 6 foot tall.
He looks huge in the movie,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, we make him look really – I mean, he's a huge guy. Like, he's just wide. Like, you know, as tall as he is, he's that wide. His muscles are – like, his arms are as big as my thighs. That's how big this guy is. But, you know, he's only about 6 foot, but we made him appear in the film, the angles we shot, that he's about 7 foot tall.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's a huge guy.
Yeah.
And, Ken, why can't you shoot straight?
What's that?
Why can't you shoot straight?
Well, you know, I wanted to I put my character, obviously he went into the military, but he was only there for 3 days.
Oh,
you know, he didn't get a lot
days.
Of training.
My bad.
You know, he's got issues with shooting straight. That's what, you know, and that's kind of why they booted him out of the Marines. And you know, he's acting like he's a Marine and he's a tough guy, but it turns out he's incompetent and just can't do anything.
And that's basically typecasting.
Yeah, pretty much. I thought you were asking me, why can't you speak straight? And I said, well, that's because I went to New Jersey public school.
I love lines like, your embarrassment to all black people. That made me laugh.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how often do you guys have to get covered in blood? Because you guys are soaked for the second half of this film.
God, every day. Every day we were covered in blood, it felt like. I mean, there was only about a week where we didn't have blood on us. So
that would be the first week.
Yeah. And then after that, it was just blood, blood, blood. We used 13 5-gallon buckets of corn syrup for our blood. And if you've ever had corn syrup on you, it's syrup. It's sticky. It's like putting pancake syrup all over yourself and just living in that all day, every day. It ripped our hair off our chest, off our legs. It was – you got in crevices and just – oh, man. I would talk about
– When I attack Ken, I jump on his back.
Yeah.
So, you know, we got stuck together. It adhered. It was so cold on set, and the syrup just combined, and I had to, like, I needed help getting off this act.
Oh. That was unreal. Unreal.
Yeah, I think that was a personal thing.
Yeah, he was just stuck on my back because
he
wanted to be there.
Yeah. So that was R.J. Hattie. And basically, there is a special place in hell for R.J. Hattie for putting us through that.
Oh, no, there's a special place in hell for you for writing that into the script, you jerk.
You know, I watched The Walking Dead, and I'm sitting there looking, and I'm like, they don't look like they're sticky. That looks wet. It doesn't look like they're going to stick to each other.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very, very jealous.
We don't have the same budget.
Right.
Yeah, their blood's a little bit darker than yours. And that's the one thing I find with movies. Maybe you guys can help me on this. Blood never looks right to me. It just never has that right color.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, we had different colors of blood, too, in our thing. We had the black blood, which was, you know, we had that. And then we had a more red colored blood.
I did notice.
Earlier. Yeah.
And then the vomited blood was more black.
Yeah,
because that had already been affected by the vampires, and the red blood was fresh blood. But you're right. You know, I notice the same thing. Anything that I see that is too light and too orange and not brown enough, because brown is really what the color of blood is once it dries up. It always looks a little bit false to me. But that said, that's because, you know, we're filmmakers and we've examine this stuff for years and years, but when it comes out to the and yourself as somebody that reviews films, you've seen, you know, a million of these things, and we just kind of got to let that slide and say, well, if the audience believes it, you know, that's good enough for us.
So is the snow at the end of the film planned, or it just sort of happened? It snowed that day.
Yeah, Ken made it snow that day. It was amazing.
Oh, that's
awesome. I have that kind of power. It's awesome.
Well, I just think you knew the scene was coming at the end, or, you know, around that time. Was it planned to be an outdoor snow scene, or just happened?
No, it just happened. We were not expecting any snow. We were hoping for no snow. We were hoping it would warm up around here. But the groundhog didn't see a shadow, so 6 more weeks of winter, and we got a huge snowstorm right at the end of the shoot when we still needed to get some shots. So it was not expected, but it worked. So it was fun, except for the fact that Kara had to walk in it.
So
it worked.
How many films have you guys made together? You've acknowledged the other projects you guys have done, which I'm not aware of. I apologize. So how many films have you guys made?
Well, a lot of the stuff. Go ahead, Dan.
No, this was our first feature, and I'll leave it up to you from there.
Yeah, the other stuff we've done web series together, we've done short films together, we've worked on other films together, like On the Wing, which is now Eco Teen Save the Planet. We've worked on that together.
Eco Teen Save the World.
I'm sorry, I'm screwing up words again. I don't do words. I'm sorry.
But you said you had the best words.
I do have the best words. Better than, you know, that other guy.
They're huge.
They're huge. But we've done a ton of stuff together. We're doing a web series coming up called Para Abnormal, which we're all going to be in. We have been doing that for a while. We kind of put it on the shelf, but we're breaking it back out. We're going to be doing more webisodes of that together. We do Apple Teenies with Ken together. We do almost everything we do.
Films that have won a lot of awards locally together. And again, we do this because we love doing it. That's really what it comes down to. And the people we would like to work with love doing it, whether they're writers or editors or actors. They do it because they love doing it. I have gone in front of multiple high school classes and spoke in their drama classes and said, you know, if you don't love doing this, don't do it. And there's a lot of kids out there that say, you know, I want to make money. I want to do it for the fame and fortune. But this is really something you do because you love doing it. This is your craft. This is your art. This is how you express yourself. And this is what you love doing it. If you're doing it for another reason, it's going to show. And really, you're not going to be very good at it.
Are you trying to sell it to this guy?
Franco he loves to twerk and then have that put on camera. So that's what he
it's going to be in my contract rider going forward. I'm going to twerk and everything.
Yes.
Let me tell you a little bit about this. So the beauty being the lead writer on this is I can get my friends to do the stupidest things possible.
Yeah, thanks.
And they don't have much of a choice. And that's really obvious in this film.
Well, the funny thing was, is I got, you know, we got pretty deep into the process, and they started talking about a scene that I hadn't caught because it's referenced, but it wasn't a scene that my character was that I recognized as one of my scenes.
And wait, stop you there, Franco. That scene was never supposed to be shot. Go ahead.
So they offhand referenced that Randall, who's played by James Remar, they caught him grinding on Barney, so they decided to shoot that. So I'm sitting here like, yeah, I just, you know, it's not every day you get to go to work and have the guy from the Warriors and Dexter's dad grind the back of your head. So got that going for me, which is nice.
Every time that James did that, he did it perfectly. And Franco would say, no, I think we need to do it again.
Let's do it more time. You know who didn't want to do it? Remar didn't want to do it. Yeah, Mitch convinced him to do it.
Yeah, and that's kudos to our director because he's the one that convinced Remar to do it. Because Remar, when he came to set, he basically said,
I'm not doing that.
This wasn't in the original script. Like, no, it's just referenced in the script.
Yeah.
And he said, well, I don't want to do this. And I'm like, okay, go talk to the director. You know, work it out with him. That's his deal. And so he did. And, you know, Mitch convinced him to do it. And he did a phenomenal job. James Remar has never played a role like this ever in his life. And he did this fantastically.
Sorry, I'm just laughing. The film is done. You guys have done the festivals record, obviously.
Yep.
Oh my God. And some. Ken, how many festivals?
40. And I'm going to apply for, the one that's out in LA that I just discovered yesterday. And you know what it's called? It's called the Boobs and Blood Festival.
Perfect. Man,
so jumping in on that one.
We checked both boxes. So
yes, we did. So
let
we're going to,
because I'll be there.
I'm going.
Going together then.
Yeah. So we've been in 40 festivals around the world. Two of the largest two largest genre festivals in the world, Fantasia and Sitges. They're Fantasia Spain.
Sitges, by the way.
Yes, Sitges. Sitges. I don't know how you say it. It's in Spain.
It's in Spain. It has been around for 50 years as the largest genre festival.
Yeah. And they invited us. We didn't submit to those festivals, which
and,
was kind of nice.
Joe Toro was the host, right? Correct me.
Was he the host this year? Yeah, I think he was. But and we won 25 awards at the festivals that we've been in, and it's been a great run. We had a lot of fun. I know Dan went to Cleveland. He had to deal with snow while I was in Phoenix, taking pictures of cactuses. You know, Dan DeLuca came up to Atlantic City with me, and we gambled all of our next budget away for the next film. So
we had a couple screenings in New York at horror festivals and
together, where did Comic Con. So we did every Comic Con festival, Geek Fest at the Comic Con festivals, and we won every single Comic Con as best film.
That's correct? Great.
Yes, we did.
So what are you doing now? Is it DVD, VOD, posters, T-shirts, number two? Give me some.
Number two. I'm doing number two as we speak.
So there is going to be a second one.
I didn't mean that.
Okay.
He was taking a crap.
I thought so, but I was like, okay, I'm going to let it go.
So let's talk about that. So, yes, the sequel has – if you watch the film, you'll see it's open for a sequel, correct?
I agree.
And the sequel is In Search of Limbo. That's the sequel. Because as vampire lore tells us, if you kill the main vampire – then everything goes back to normal.
Correct.
All right. And so it's basically the search for Blimpo. And so the sequel is called, you know, The Search for Blimpo. And it picks up right where it left off. And we know in vampire lore is if you kill off the main vampire, everything goes back to normal. If you don't get the main vampire, this is going to continue. And so we're searching for Blimpo, who we believe is the main vampire. And that's where the story picks up. Now, our friend Dan Franco, who doesn't know it, has a couple of brothers. He's one of triplets, by the way. Yeah, Franco is one of triplets, and his brother Bart shows up. So Franco's character is Barney, and Bart shows up looking for his brother, Barney. And the story continues from there. How do we find Blimpo? And that's where the sequel starts. Where it ends, you'll have to watch the movie to see.
Okay, great. My computer's doing strange things. That's all good. Do you guys have posters and DVDs to buy?
We do. Let me tell you about that. We are available on most video on demand platforms, so you can download it and watch it or stream it through Apple iTunes, Fandango, Amazon. We're on Amazon Prime right now, so if you have an Amazon Prime membership, you can watch it because it's part of your membership. Yes.
Let me stop you right there.
Go.
Anybody that's listening to this podcast, request that we were on Netflix. Netflix has basically changed their way they're going to accept films. And that means if you're not a name, you're not going to be accepted. And so request, just go to Netflix, request it, request The Night Watchman, and we'll be on your Netflix, and then you can watch this for free on Netflix as well. Go ahead, Ken.
All right, and also at Amazon, you can get our Blu-ray, which I'll hold up for you. I know most people can't see it, but you can see it. So we do have our Blu-ray right here. We also have posters that you can buy on our website. We have a store.
T-shirts, socks, coffee mugs.
Mm-hmm. We got all that stuff. Is there anything I forgot, guys?
That if you were in Japan, they have the coolest poster.
Yes.
And they have the coolest DVD, and we speak in Japanese.
That's right.
So if you can buy the Japanese version, kudos.
Yes, and we're available in the UK. Obviously, we're in North America, so Canada, we're available. We're available in Germany, Australia, Malaysia. I mean, we're available all over. And, you know, on the pirating sites. So, yeah.
Stop right there.
We prefer you didn't go there.
Yes. If you want a Night Watchman 2, don't pirate us.
Yes.
If you want to pirate us, contact Ken Arnold, send him a dollar, and we're good.
Yeah, send me a dollar. So let's do it.
Well, gentlemen, thank you for your time. I'd give you fun questions, but you guys, we run out of time, and I'm already having this crazy audio issue again, which I'm going to have to figure out what it is. It's still recording, so we're all good. But thank you for your film. I really enjoyed it, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. Let us know when this airs so we can share it with all our fans.
Absolutely, I will. Don't worry. I'll send you.
Please follow us on Facebook and on Twitter at TMW Movie.
And Instagram.
We love Canada.
I love it. I lived there for a year in Thunder Bay.
Oh, yeah. I know where that is. I've been there.
Yeah, I lived in Thunder Bay.
I'll be moving up soon to Canada.
I can't wait to see you.